Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Yoga Teacher Survival Course. My name is Erin Aquin, and I am so thrilled that I get to work with all of you over the next 6 weeks. I began teaching about 11 years ago, and as all of you know through reading the description for this course, it was certainly not a smooth ride. I taught classes where there were less than a handful of people. I taught classes that, no one else wanted to teach. And I really had trial by fire as my learning curve, as I'm sure a lot of you can relate to. So in tonight's module, what we're going to be speaking about is how to build up a student base. There are new studios and new teachers popping up all over the place, all of the time. And what we're going to talk about tonight is how you can carve out a loyal following of students. Last week, I read a blog post by another yoga instructor. She had some advice for newer teachers, and it was something I couldn't totally get behind. She suggested that rather than worry about marketing your teaching business or trying to make a name as a teacher, you should jump at every opportunity you get to teach. Now, I understand that she was pointing out that beginning a teaching career, it's really important just to get some chops as a teacher. She was pointing to the fact that it's more important to worry about being a great teacher than filling the room. So, you know, you want to be ready for those big classes that you're inevitably going to teach and have the right skills and confidence as an instructor. But the reason I couldn't totally get behind her advice is because in my early days as an instructor, I actually did exactly what she suggested. I jumped at every opportunity to teach. I subbed the classes no one else wanted. I tried to run classes in gyms, in martial arts studios. I actually ran a 10-week yoga session in the back of a spa, an apothecary in Toronto where I lived at the time. So I was trying to build a following in places that weren't really conducive to yoga at all. I was renting rooms. I was trying to sell people who were coming for a different reason at their gym to come and do my yoga class, even though it probably wasn't going to be something that they would be necessarily interested in at the time. Now, this certainly gave me a lot of teaching experience. It also gave me a very thick skin because I had to deal with class after class where I made less than $10 or taught a handful of people or sometimes no one at all. But ultimately, these obstacles distracted me from doing the job I was there to do. So you had this very young, excited instructor who week after week after week was just feeling disheartened and like, wow, this is really hard. At the time, I had actually also been working in the music industry, and I really felt a disconnect, a division in my life. I would often be up until 2:30 in the morning because we'd be out at a club looking at a new band, and then I'd get up at 6 in the morning and go and do my yoga practice. So at some point, it became clear to me that I needed to really make a decision about what I wanted to do. And for better or for worse, my heart was really with yoga. And I remember having a conversation with one of my teachers and saying very proudly to him that, okay, I've decided I'm going to teach yoga full time. And, you know, I expected him to really support me because that's how he had always been with me. But he actually warned me against it. He said that although yoga is a beautiful lifestyle and teaching is great and it's wonderful, you know, it's also very, very, very difficult to make it. In fact, I have friends who still live in Toronto and have been teaching just as long as I have, and they're teaching 20, 25 classes a week and barely making ends meet. So we're going to address so much of these things in our course over this next 6 weeks. But what I really want to highlight is that these obstacles, these things where we're teaching too much or teaching the wrong classes in the wrong spaces at the wrong times, they really are obstacles. And they distracted me, and they probably distract you if those are problems that you've had. I can't be absolutely certain, but I do wonder if my teaching chops would have improved more quickly if I had had the opportunity to teach consistent groups rather than just teach drop-in classes. It was very important to learn about the good, bad, and ugly parts of our yoga industry. That was definitely valuable, but in myself, it caused a lot of doubt and confusion about the path I was on as a teacher. For years, my sense of self-worth hinged on how many people were coming in and out of my classes. I was a small fish in a huge pond, and I was hoping that somehow magically, if I taught enough and I met the right people and, you know, the stars aligned, that I would be able to make this thing work. And there's definitely an element of that, but I was really just waiting for something else to happen rather than helping to make it happen myself. It was actually probably a good 5 years of teaching, both full and part-time, and thinking I would quit at least once every 3 months before I felt confident and consistent. This goes back to why I ultimately disagree with what that other instructor wrote in her blog last week, because I personally have wasted so much time and energy that should have been placed into my classes because I didn't really know how to run my teaching business. My goal for all of you is for you to be able to avoid as much of that heartache, pain, self-doubt as possible. And I'm going to do everything I can over this next 6 weeks to help you do that. I don't want to see any more incredible yoga studios close down. I don't want to see any other amazing yoga teachers quit because of simple lack of business knowledge. It really breaks my heart, and we're going to change things, and I hope I can help change things for all of you. So today, we want to spend time getting very clear on who your ideal clients are and how to get them into your class. We want to spend less time worrying about paying the bills or counting heads to see how many people you retained from last week to this week, and more time actually enjoying this wonderful profession. We're really lucky that we get to work in an environment where people love to see us. They come just to see us. And I don't really know of many other professions where you can wear track pants and be barefoot. So this is really a very special, beautiful opportunity. And I hope that we together will just get rid of a lot of the muck that's in the way so that you can enjoy and thrive as a yoga instructor. Before we dive into the different ways to inspire your ideal students to take your class, which this module is all about, we're actually going to begin with a short visualization. We're going to figure out who we are and who our perfect or ideal client is. So to do this, all you need to do is get a comfortable position. You can sit wherever you're sitting and just close your eyes. Sit comfortably and imagine getting ready to go teach your favorite class of the day, but insert yourself into your ideal life. As you get ready for the day, notice the space you're in. Is your living space quiet and peaceful? Or is it bustling with energy and activity? Now walk out of your living space on your way to teach. How do you get to your first class? Notice the method of transportation you take to get there. What do you see as you arrive? Now walk into your teaching space. Is it indoors or outdoors? Notice the colors of the space and the atmosphere. Go and sit at the front of your mat, sitting across from your ideal student. How many other people are in the room? With your ideal student in front of you, what do you see as you look at them? What's their gender, their age approximately? Imagine that you can pierce a little bit deeper inside of them. What's their job, their profession? Why are they taking yoga? What do they seek from their practice? Go even deeper inside of this other person. So deeply that you actually begin to see the class from their perspective. Now you are the student. What do you see when you look at the teacher in front of you? What qualities does your guide possess? What do you love about your yoga teacher and about their practice that they're sharing with you? Stay in the student perspective as you leave the class at the end of the practice. Notice the qualities that you feel. Now slowly start to open your eyes. And I'm going to mute our call for about 5 minutes just so that you have a few moments to jot down any notes. Most importantly, as the teacher, what were the important things about your life and your teaching space? Who was your ideal student? Any details you can come up with are great. Are they single? Are they in a relationship? Are they professional? Are they younger, older, athletic? What are the qualities of that ideal person who comes to your class? And finally, the third thing that I want you to write down is the qualities that your student saw in you, you as the ideal teacher. So we'll take about 5 minutes right now to write down those three things. Again, your ideal life and teaching space, your ideal student, and your ideal student's ideal teacher. We'll come back in just a few minutes. Welcome back. Welcome back. So now that we have a little bit more of an idea about who our ideal students might be, it may be also important for you to note that this could have been a challenge. So sometimes I ask other instructors, you know, who do you teach for? And they're not all that clear. Now, of course, the reasoning for this is actually very common. We're all taught probably in our yoga teacher training and throughout our yoga careers that yoga is for everyone. So we don't often make distinctions about who should or shouldn't be in our class, and that is certainly not what I want you to ever feel like you have to do. But what we may want to get rid of is that although yoga is for everyone, you as an instructor and your personal style that you love to teach may not be for everyone. I have a yoga colleague who is a beautiful teacher. She is very inspiring, and her classes are just some of the hardest flow classes I've ever attended. But when I met her, she was regularly teaching classes that had three or less people. Some weeks she would have no shows. She has a lot of experience, and we had that same self-doubt conversation and, you know, thinking about maybe whether she should be a teacher or not. We had that conversation, and one of the interesting things was, if you teach vigorous, hardcore classes, you need to make sure that the timing of that class, the description of that class, matches what it actually is. You see, the problem is that the studio she worked for had her slated to teach level one flow classes. And typically, anyone that came to her level one flow classes felt like they weren't good enough. I heard people say it's more like a level five yoga class. And it really took some altering of what the class description actually was, as well as realizing that her ideal audience were not people that were generally going to be able to come to yoga at 10 or 11 in the morning on a weekday. Actually, her ideal audience was people who would get up early on a Saturday morning, people who were healthy and fit and had, you know, a lot that they wanted to accomplish in a day and wanted to start with a very vigorous flow. It wouldn't have made sense for her to be teaching probably at 9 or 10 o'clock at night because, again, her ideal audience would probably be doing something to cool down at that point in the time because they get up early. They're the people who are up early on Sunday, going for a bike ride, going for brunch with their friends and family. And until she made a shift in her teaching schedule and changed the description of her class, nothing really happened. Once she did that, her classes now get regularly 20 to 30 people. It's hard to get into her classes a lot of the time. But people know what they're in for, and the people who love it go and are loyal to that. The point that I'm trying to make here is that we really need to know who we are as instructors. If you really love teaching gentle hatha classes, it may be reasonable for you to turn down some of those opportunities when they come up if it's for a hardcore, very rigid Ashtanga class. Developing your teaching chops certainly doesn't mean that you're limited to one style, but you also didn't become a yoga instructor to do something you don't enjoy. You're teaching because you want to do what you love. This is a labor of love. Nobody becomes a yoga teacher because they're going to make $1 million. So I would really strongly suggest that you actually do the thing that you are interested in. In my own experience, my most popular yoga classes are yin-yang yoga. I love teaching yin-yang because for me it's a really nice balance between a very vigorous flow and long-held, still challenging often, postures. And it allows me to bridge my love of Chinese medicine and all of my experience as an acupuncturist and as a Chinese medicine practitioner. It allows me to blend that with yoga. I don't teach yin yang the way that someone in California probably does, because my education is probably a little bit different. The philosophy that I'm working with is probably a little bit different. I don't teach yin yang yoga the way that probably other people in my own studio interpret it. And that's fine. But that really is my brand. That's my blend of yoga. And those are my most popular classes. Whether it's 9:30 in the morning on a weekday or 4:30 at night, it really has gone so well since I made that switch. When I teach classes that are outside of that, when I teach classes that are not totally congruent with my own teaching style, they just simply don't do as well. I'm often bored. My students are often very inconsistent with how much they come. And it just goes to show that really what you love and what you're attracted to, other people will love and will be attracted to. But you need to, first of all, be consistent with what you're teaching. Again, it's important to do what you love and be consistent with it. One of the very common roadblocks for teachers is that we focus on the people who don't like our classes. So I've seen this happen where there are 20, I've had this happen to myself. There are 25 people in the room who are loving what you're doing. And there are two people that are clearly not into it. They may not even be doing what you're asking them to do, which, as we know, as instructors, is very annoying and very disrespectful. But do you change your entire class for those two people? Certainly not. The worst thing you can do if you are trying to build a loyal following is to try and switch your style and change it up too much from week to week. When students come to my yin yang practices, they pretty much know what to expect. They can expect that the first half of the class will probably be more vigorous. I commonly do sun salutations at the beginning, usually 3A, 3B, and with some variation. That's part of my Ashtanga background, so that's what I often do. But if I had my students come in and do 20 minutes of yin before we started the yang, that would probably throw people off, and they may enjoy it. They may, you know, think it was cool to do it 1 week. But if I just started to go all over the place with my practices and my flows, it would change the dynamic of what I'm trying to create with my students. Now, your ideal student may love sporadic things. And if that's the way your ideal student is, maybe that works for you. I can only really speak about my own students and the people who are attracted to my classes. So to kind of give you an example of my own loyal following, knowing who your students are, what you were trying to build, and how you connect to them are sort of the three main important points for you to think about. Knowing who your students are can be both very superficial and very deep. So knowing what they like to do, their hobbies, what they're seeking for at a soul level, all of that information is important. And you find out who they are by really observing and by asking. So one of the really fun things you can start to do in your practice is when people come up to thank you at the end, if someone takes time to come up and look you in the eye and say thank you for a class, something you could experiment with this week is instead of just saying, oh, you're welcome, or no, thank you, or whatever it is we say. You could say, I'm glad you enjoyed the class. What did you like about it? That's your homework this week. I want everybody to ask at least two students who thank you at the end of class what they enjoyed about the class that day. Other times, you will have students who come up to you at the end of the class to thank you, and they tell you that it was a hard practice for them. When someone does that, I want you to ask them, what did you find challenging about the practice today? Or does challenging mean you didn't enjoy yourself? Really trying to get some information beyond just, hey, 15 people said they liked my class, and that's great, but I have no idea why. Ask your students for feedback. Now, I would caution you against saying, just as a blanket statement, if anyone has feedback, come to tell me, because what can happen there is some people will come up to you and say, I loved that we did pigeon pose for 3 minutes on each side. Someone else will come up to you and say, I hate that we did pigeon pose for 3 minutes on each side. And what this exercise is designed to do is to help you really pinpoint what your students are looking for and what they love, so you can bring more of that energetically to your classes. What you don't want to do is start to open up the doors for further self-doubt. I would also say that if you're going to take feedback from someone, or you're going to ask for feedback from your students because it is valuable, that you ask people that have been coming consistently. I would never ask a brand new student who I've never met before to give me a rundown of their thoughts about my class. Not because I don't care, certainly, but mainly because I'm not teaching classes for everyone. Going back to that point, your yoga practice or your yoga teaching is not there to cater to every single person that walks through the door. You are looking to build a loyal following, and your loyal following are the people that love what you do and the way that you do it. Catering to those people is how you build a loyal following. This is another really important point, and some of you may even disagree with me, but knowing what you're trying to build is essential. Knowing what you're trying to do in your classes, what you're really trying to do, is everything. If you are trying to give your students a deep experience of meditation, if you're trying to give them deep, deep, deep relaxation, a flow class with dance music may not be the right fit. If you are trying to get people very energized and have more of an ecstatic yoga experience, being sort of cold and hands off, never laughing, never smiling, never breaking the tension in the room, is probably not the way to get there. So this is an important point. What are you trying to build in your classes? In my yin-yang classes, we'll use that as the example tonight, I am trying to build community. The most important part of yoga for me is connecting with other people. So in my classes, the people who are loyal to my classes, my true fans, as they're often called in marketing circles, my true fans are people who are generally very warm, very generous, very caring, and who are really interested in what's beyond their limitations. So typically, the people I teach are willing to work in groups with other people. So a big fixture in a lot of my yin yang classes is that I always have people do partner work together. This is really powerful because it makes you put yourself in someone else's hands. And often people do things that they didn't imagine that they could, which blows their mind. That's, you know, that's my reason for teaching yoga, is to show people that their self-contained or self-created limitations are actually not the full picture. So when someone does forearm balance for the first time, even though 5 minutes ago they were saying that they couldn't do it, and they work with two other people, and all of a sudden they're balancing on their forearms, it's a beautiful moment. It calls into question everything that they think about who they are. So people who are into that like my classes. People who just want to be comfortable and don't want to be pushed and don't want to explore their bodies or their explore philosophy in that way really hate my classes. They don't want to work with other people. They don't want to do things that are scary or risky or might prove that they could be doing more. So it's important to know what you're actually trying to create in your classes and do that, and actually do that. Finally, another important point that really allows us as instructors to build a loyal following is how we connect with our students. So both knowing who your students are and what you are trying to build in the class together is important, and it touches in on connection. But very practically, connecting with your students is also about being available, reaching out to them. The way I connect with my own students is I do a lot of adjustments. I don't do a lot of really difficult or forceful adjustments as I used to in my early teaching career, but I try to get my hands on at least every single person once in a class. This is really important to me because it lets me know how much tension that they're holding. It allows them to know that I'm there to support them. Other teachers are able to connect with their students even from their own mats. So again, I've seen teachers do the entire class with their students, and they can talk through the whole practice and do the whole practice. And that's how they teach, and their students like that. But I can't do that. It's not the way I was trained, and physically it gets very, very exhausting to do every class with your class. So I'm a very verbal teacher. I spend very little time sitting on my own mat. I am constantly walking around like a hawk, watching people, and just trying to let everybody know that I'm right there with them and I'm very present. And that's what my loyal following of students seems to like. So you connect with your students in class the way that you do. But then practically, as you're building a loyal following, one idea might be to, if you have a way of collecting their personal information, their emails, it's to check in from time to time. You know, shoot your students a quick email, maybe a mass email. We'll talk more about how to market and do some of those certain things in the next few weeks. One of the most effective things that has happened to me as a student is I've had instructors, you know, post on my Facebook wall saying, "Hey, Erin, thank you so much for coming to the studio. It was really great to meet you, and I hope you enjoyed the class, and I hope I'll see you again soon." Really simple things like that, they work. They work for me. It's like, oh, the person remembered my name. They wanted to connect with me. Reaching out to your students is a really big deal, and sometimes we forget who we are to our students as instructors. So to your students, you may be the most calm and serene person that they've ever met. You are there helping to provide and guide them through a very deep journey, a wild ride into the self. And your loyal students love you. You know, the people I've been teaching for years really feel like I'm part of their lives. And I may not know very much about their personal lives, but being a yoga instructor, you're often the first person outside of a woman's partner who knows that they're pregnant. As a yoga instructor, your students may feel comfortable enough to tell you that they're going through a rough patch and that they may not be able to do the whole flow class today because they're just struggling emotionally. Each time that someone connects with you in this way, it's an opportunity. We as instructors touch people's lives. And in my mind, this is such an important responsibility. It doesn't mean we need to be grandiose about it or anything less than totally humble. But when you're connected with the people who take, you know, at least 2 hours out of their day, the time they need to get ready, to maybe get a babysitter, to drive to the place that you teach, spend that time and energy and effort in your presence, in your practice, and then go home and step back into the stream of life. That is a really beautiful and special thing. This is so important because you can't do these things, teaching things that A, you don't love, and B, are just not set up well. As instructors, we speak a lot about authenticity, whether we're speaking about it in a more gross or subtle way. So as a teacher, it's really important that we are as authentic as possible, and that means true to yourself. It means you teach the things you're actually interested in. It means you connect with the people that you want to see in your class. And you will have a lot of people who probably didn't fit into your persona or didn't fit into your ideal demographic who also love you. And that is the beauty of yoga. You know, most of my students are under 40, but I also have a student who's very loyal, who's in her 70s, and she's just a firecracker. And that is the beauty of yoga, is that we can cater things to one group of people, but you never know who it's actually going to speak to. Tailoring yourself to one demographic or one persona will help you. If you are teaching yoga to a bunch of people at a new age store, you probably don't need to provide a full 8-page report from a medical journal about why yoga is effective. You know, you can probably bet that if that is your ideal group of people, if you like people who are a little bit more new agey, a little bit more into things that maybe the mainstream would think is a little bit out there, you don't have to worry about appeasing them the same way that you may need to if you were teaching a corporate yoga class.